Adam Cravens, and Jane Ellen watch more movies each month than most people do in a year. Parental guidance suggested reviews new movies in theaters with no spoilers promise. These film nerds know their stuff.
Hello and welcome to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
I bet you thought we wouldn't do a podcast.
I mean, I knew better, but I'm sure there's a lot of people out there. They're like, literally, they cannot go to the theater. The theater is locked shut.
Nothing stops them. No.
We're like Terminators or fungus under the... No, we're going to go with Terminator. That's better. Yeah. I don't like that other comparison.
No. And we did pretty much call it as we saw it.
If you had not already, on the podcast last week, we essentially started saying what happens next if they do close the theaters. Maybe they start bringing these things to streaming. And guess what, kids?
Boom.
They're bringing it to streaming. Onward is going to be streaming. Wonder Woman 84 is being talked about, being dropped on digital. It's going to be an unusual next couple of weeks or however long this thing
will.
comes through.
And I also wonder, let's take Wonder Woman 84, and let's say they're doing it like they're doing the other things, like it's $20 to rent it for 48 hours.
Yeah.
And believe me, if I could just see a movie for $20 every day, I'd see a whole lot more movies. Oh, I mean, that's $5 Tuesday movie seeing.
It's a lot easier if you can break it down and justify it, like, per your family.
Right. Now, let's say it makes a whole bunch of money. Do you think that would set enough of a precedence where they go, we don't really need the theater after all?
I don't think you ever get rid of the theater. Kind of in the same way that, like, you still have people that want to buy vinyl records. Mm-hmm. Like, it's still a thing. Now, the more advanced you get your home theater system, like, I have a Bose speaker coming out of a 4K Samsung television. Like, there's a really good chance in a lot of cases.
Oh, those are my Bose speakers. They're awesome, aren't they?
Bose, I know. Kids. Like, it really is fantastic.
I give great gifts.
Just telling you, like, it's like, if looking into, like, the sun is like being smiled upon by God, this is like hearing his voice. If God has speakers in heaven, he uses Bose.
Of course he does.
Just letting you know. But in most cases, like, my theater going experience is probably superior to my theater, like, in town. And the only thing I think that they can genuinely offer that you can't, like, I mean, I can eat whatever I want. I can pause it. I've got the comfort of my couch. I can watch it with as many people as I want in my house, unless it's something like an Avengers Endgame or a Star Wars or something that just it's almost a communal experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I would argue that, like, when I watch Avengers Endgame now, it plays a little bit differently than when I saw it opening night with, like, 300 other fans that were just salivating at getting to see this for the first time. I think films like that have to exist there. And if you're going to make a movie that costs $400, $500 million, you're going to have to squeeze every bit of revenue that you can out of it. But, like, a romantic comedy that cost $20 million, or let's say it's on the more expensive end, it's $50 million. Mm-hmm. Does that have to be shown in a theater? Like, does an art house film, like something similar to, like, The Goldfinch, does it really need a theatrical release? Like,
no.
I think there are a couple of films out there that just, they kind of define the theater going experience. Your Raiders of the Lost Ark, your Jurassic Parks, pretty much anything Steven Spielberg's done that had a budget of over, like, $50-60 million. But there's a lot of movies out there that really feel more at home and can get more care and attention on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Or, like, even if you wanted to, you know, release it only for purchase first on, like, Movies Anywhere, or if you want to do it like a streamer, like us at, like, a Netflix or Disney Plus, I think depending on how long this thing goes, you really do see, like, a paradigm shift, like, in it, because now people are sitting there going, wait, you let me watch this in my home. I'm willing to pay additional, like, you know, like you were saying, like $19 or $29 or whatever they, whatever becomes the precedent that you set at that.
It's just still less than $90.
Or, yeah, and getting like a $12 popcorn and an $8 drink.
We all know.
Now, I mean, this does cut into like your theaters. Because they, I mean, they're obviously going to make money off, you know, people getting popcorn and everything like that. But whenever you decide to shift in an industry like that, a lot of times they don't care that, you know, so and so, like whenever music became downloadable, like you saw a large shift.
That was just mind blowing, you know.
You saw a large shift in like the purchase of CDs or just like getting something in a hard copy. In general, like as the internet and as phones became more advanced and you could stream video and music at a rate that like you didn't have to wait 6 hours for a song to download or 8 hours for, you know, a minute and a half movie trailer to come onto your computer. So, I mean, I think this one, this is going to be a moment we talk about, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now anyways. But there's a very serious possibility that this does change the way that movies are released in the future.
And this intrigues me. I don't use the Twitter as often as I should just because, you know, I got a lot going on.
I don't know that anybody should use
well,
Twitter.
There are some parts of it that I find to be very amusing, and it is generally when there's something on, let's say it's the Oscars, everyone's watching it at the same time and tweeting about it. So now that these movies can be available right now, Emma, The Hunt, and The Invisible Man are all doing tweets with a viewing with the director, and in some cases, some of the stars.
So it's almost like a live commentary,
yes,
if you will.
So I'm guessing they're going to say, "We're, you know, rent your movie, start your movie at this time, and right now, you know, the director will start it at the same time and just start saying."
And it's much more acceptable to do it from your phone at your house than in the privacy
of
a theater.
And as a fan of film, I love that.
Like thinking of the possibility, like doing this with a new Tarantino release and actually having him answer a question that I have about that.
Right.
Or just being like, you know, a point well
made.
It's
on my name. It's on my name.
He knows who I am.
I know. So I find that as a form of entertainment, I'm all for that. And I like that. I know that Mindy Kaling used to do that during her show, The Mindy Project. At least the last couple of seasons, she would live tweet during it. And that was super fun. So I like that
the potential interaction.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. And so I am curious to see how it goes.
And honestly, that does seem like kind of a natural progression with like for a sitcom. Like people, it's almost like having them in your home week after week. Like you get to know these people. You get to know their idiosyncrasies. Like you almost feel like you know these fictional characters. Like to actually be able to interact with some of the people that do it almost seems like a natural progression from, I guess, the immediacy and the connectivity that we're used to. That seems like kind of a marriage between film and social media.
Mm-hmm.
Like it seems like a good use of the two of those things.
And I also love about what I see happening with celebrities, and I'm sure non-celebrities as well, but I don't know random dude in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Fallon and Stephen Colbert and just people, Neil Diamond, for instance, they are doing concerts and doing fun stuff from their homes. Neil Diamond, who, by the way, now looks just like Merle Haggard, redid Sweet Caroline. You know how the line goes, hands, touching hands, reaching out? He changed it to hands, washing hands.
Ah!
I don't touch you. You don't touch me.
Okay, that is perfect.
Isn't it great?
That's exceptional.
And so I love that. And watching Ellen DeGeneres just be bored and calling the famous people in her phone, I could do that all day.
I think you and I had a discussion about this. Just there are some there are some hosts that, like, this is very off-putting. Like, they like more of, you know, a strict, like, you know, regimen or schedule. But, like, there's some of them, like Ellen DeGeneres, that they thrive.
Oh, yeah.
When you put them into the unknown and just let kind of the chaos take over, like, that's, I don't know what it, like, it hones their abilities or whatever. And it just, I mean, you've described that. I haven't heard one moment of it. But I'm sitting, if you would have described that to me in like a pitch meeting, I would have been like, absolutely. Why is that not a segment already? That's,
exactly.
That's a brilliant idea.
And Jimmy Kimmel, he was reading what people had written about. He was doing his little mini logs and such. And someone, they're going on and on, Jimmy, you have a lot to live for. Please don't be drinking like that and doing drugs. And I'm going to pray for you. And I really hope you have a great life. And apparently they're concerned that he looks like he's doing drugs because of his eyes. And he said, look, I'm Italian. I don't have a glam squad at home with me. This is just what I look like.
This is when I am not on the Tonight Show.
I look
sorry,
like this.
Kids. Like.
And he said, I appreciate your thoughts and prayers. I am not binging on drugs and alcohol. I just have dark circles. And then he picks up a photo of his grandmother. He said, this is my grandma. She was at a wedding. This is her at her best. Sorry. So, and just to get glimpses into their home life, I mean, with Jimmy Kimmel, his wife is being the cameraman and apparently not laughing at the jokes. And it does land differently when you hear all these monologues and there's no other response.
Because you're used to hearing the,
yes.
I mean, you know, that sitcom, like, bottled, you know, response, or the laugh track. I do find it particularly hysterical that Jimmy Kimmel's wife apparently doesn't think he's funny. It's in the same, I think it was when it was either Robert Downey Jr. or Johnny Depp was talking about how they had, like, it was either Robert Downey Jr.'s kids just didn't care that he was Iron Man, or Johnny Depp's kids just could care less that he was Jack Sparrow, but Jack Sparrow knew Iron Man, or the other way around, and their kids were, they're like, wait, you know him? We can meet them? And they're just like, I headlined a billion-dollar, whatever, Dad, quit being lame. Can you introduce me to him? Like, I love that Jimmy Kimmel, like, who has his own show on a major network, his wife's just kind of like, yeah, here. How long are we going to do this? Can we? I'd really like to finish off those potato chips I've got in the
It's
kitchen.
Really quite amusing how I'm guessing he's getting nothing off of her face as she's doing it.
She's probably rolling her eyes like behind the cell phone
giving
or
him
whatever.
The wrap it up sign.
Oh, listen, sweetheart. I red boxed that movie. I'd really like to see it instead of you're very funny. I'm glad you pay the bills. Can we please wrap it up?
You're listening to Parental Guidance Suggested, brought to you by Hinson Oakley Family Dentistry. Jane Ellen and Adam Craven's talking about, not what's in the theaters, what's not in the theaters.
Which is a strange term. I'm going to be honest. Like, I had never even ever considered this possibility when we started.
I know.
The pod, like, we've had slow weeks where I saw movies that, like, I didn't have a real interest in, but I figured that was as bad as it gets. I had never considered there would be a week where there just, not only was there not a new film released in theaters, but we could not get in the theaters. Like, my head still doesn't accept it.
It is hard to think about. So we thought, even though it's obvious we don't need a movie to talk, we thought we would talk about movies of note, landmark movies.
It's still a film podcast, and due to circumstances largely beyond our control, we can still talk about films, and we can talk about films that chances are you've either heard of or seen a multitude of times.
Or if you have not.
Oh, my goodness. This is a let's say that you're not able to go to work right now. There's a good chance this is available on Netflix. Like, you can, like, order it. You can purchase that. The film is in most cases available, like, somewhere or everywhere.
Well, right now, the movie I have chosen, did a switcheroo you don't know about, right now, it is available on Cinemax, and it's not available on other stuff, too. You can rent or buy it on Amazon. You can rent it for $3.99. I own it, and much like Adam, I own it in more than one form, because it is such a good movie. What landmark film, dare I say, blockbuster, do you think we're going to start with?
Well, I know that we'd messed around with Jurassic Park, but what you're telling me leads me to believe that it's not that.
It is not that, because that's on land.
Are we going to talk about Jaws?
We sure are.
Because we've never mentioned Jaws.
Now, Jaws.
I have picked on both of those movies and said that Jurassic Park is essentially land Jaws, and Jaws is really just like water dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both directed by Steven Spielberg. And, like, I mean, honest to goodness, like, his Hitchcockian, like, sense of anticipation is what makes both of those movies work so well. Jurassic Park, at one point, was the highest grossing film mm-hmm. of all time, set a precedent for CGI in motion pictures. Jaws, the first film to ever cross the $100 million mark. In its initial release, like, basically created the summer blockbuster as you know it now.
Now, we're going to go back a little bit. Jaws, the movie, was based on the book by Peter Benchley. And Peter Benchley got inspired from a story that actually happened. So imagine you are in New England in 1916. You're out of the aughts. You're in 1916. World War I is all you're hearing about until, I don't know, 4th of July, 1916. You get five people go swimming and only one comes back.
Which, by the way, is a great tagline for a movie poster.
Exactly.
Five go swimming. And
one
only
comes back. Anyway, there was this sea monster that was around 9 feet long, and all of a sudden, in New Jersey, it's replaced the headlines for World War I, because how bizarre is that? And these attacks happened between the 1st and the 12th of July. A reign of terror! The first recorded fatal shark attack in U.S. history. Now, we all know some of those pilgrims had to have been eaten by something.
But that they were also not, you know, able to have access to, like, the microfiche.
Exactly.
Or whatever was on, like, the parchment or whatever they circulated. Or the gentleman walking around with the bell just being like, Lady Smith, she's dead, mauled by a bear.
So, mauled by a bear. So, imagine this. Imagine you're on the beach and you hear someone screaming and you just assume, they're joking around.
They're playing. That's Ted.
That's what happened to the first guy that got killed.
Hush, Ted. Yeah. You got us.
People heard this guy being mauled, and they were like, eh. At the time, in 1916, scientists didn't know sharks could bite through bone. They didn't know a lot about sharks. There was no Shark Week.
What did scientists know at that point?
I don't know.
I mean, I would think the first person that ever studied a shark, like...
However, after they find a body with no head, because some random swimmer had gotten mauled, then they started to realize there is something going on. So it really is fascinating. And just to place yourself there at the time, it really, really happened. And you can read all sorts of things on it about what actually happened in 1916. So Peter Benchley knew about this. And he said, well, I'm going to write a story. And I recall that all I heard about was Jaws, how I wasn't allowed to go and see Jaws. But I knew there was a book named Jaws, and I knew that it was a best-selling book. And it was a movie about a shark, and everyone saw it but me. And it became the first summer blockbuster.
Films were released in the summertime before that, but, like, this was kind of the first one that people came in mass for. And whenever studios, I guess, realized the prime time that this was. And you also have, you know, like the around the 1960s, 1970s, like teenagers are also like coming into disposable incomes. Like all of these kind of this perfect storm of events comes together to create like this time that studios can now basically like you just kind of use the advertising against a group that wants to socially like congregate.
Apparently one of the taglines to market it was, "It is as if God created the devil and gave him Jaws." I don't recall that one. That's pretty funny.
Well, this was before they had perfected the advertising.
So, think about Jaws, not in terms of the story. Think about it visually. Jaws, again, this is 70s, but Jaws was made for less than $9 million. So you've got the cast to pay. A lot of money went into Bruce the Shark, which mostly did not work. And they're basically just hanging out on a beach, and they need some boats.
If you do not know anything about, and I know you do.
I do.
If you don't know anything about the production of the first Jaws movie, like it's a, like it, everything that can go wrong with that went wrong. Like this is well before Steven Spielberg is kind of like the godfather of modern cinema.
Mm-hmm.
They had given this major motion picture to a television director. Like, go back and watch like Duel or like a lot of the other stuff. Like, I think he did a lot of Columbo as well. Like, he had a lot of experience doing television, but like this is the first time he had done a film that was going to be released in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that can go wrong with this film goes wrong. Bruce the Shark sinks to the bottom of the ocean the first day they bring it out, which is also the reason you never see the shark in the movie.
Which is wonderful, because the one time you do see the shark, it's kind of comical, kind of not, but it's like, chomp, chomp, chomp. You could make a case that seeing the shark is a little funny.
Well, the thing about it is, and like Spielberg has even talked about this in like the commentaries or like, you know, interviews that he's done with it, it forced him to rethink the way he was going to shoot the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like he basically just turned to one of the masters of cinema, Alfred Hitchcock, and he was just like, okay, I literally cannot show the shark. What can I do to build this in people's heads? You get like that iconic John Williams, the dun, mm-hmm. dun, 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 dun. So like you're getting the kind of that the shark eye view in some cases where you're, yes, coming up on people. So you get to just create this image of this like bloodthirsty like killer in your head. You don't see it till the end. And like you said, the shark is not the greatest special effect in the world. And I think the film benefits from it drastically in that you actually only, mm-hmm, probably see Jaws for, I'm going to say less than 2 or 3 minutes,
yeah,
really in the movie. I mean, it's, in the same way that like Beetlejuice is only in Beetlejuice for about 17 minutes,
mm-hmm,
like for the movie to be called Jaws, like you really spend very little time with Jaws. It's just about how Jaws is affecting people.
So why did this movie happen to be such a landmark? They spent $9 million to make it, $2 million to market it, and it made over $263 million domestically. So it was the first movie to make that kind of bank. And all of a sudden, other companies said, we should do that. We should totally have movies make a lot of money.
Universal even said, we should make more of these Jaws films.
Yes, they did.
Now, if you haven't seen any of the other Jaws movies, I'm going to tell you right now, there's a reason why we don't constantly revisit Jaws 3.
I don't think I've seen any of the others. And aren't there like 18 Jaws
movies? There's Jaws 2, which is a, I'm going to give it at least a mediocre. It's a mediocre follow-up, okay, but it's watchable. Jaws 2 is watchable. It is not the first film, but if y'all really like the first one and you're tired of watching it for the 100th time, watch Jaws 2. There's stupider things you could do.
Yeah, okay.
Jaws 3 is a dumpster fire.
Ah!
It's a dumpster fire full of baby diapers. Like, you, I can't describe to you how awful and just wretched and stupid Jaws 3. You remember those films that came out right after Avatar that, like, really wanted to use 3D as a gimmick?
Yeah.
All right. That was, like, actually, like, technologically superior 3D. Like, a lot of the movies were dumb that wanted to pull you in with it. This is that awful, like, green and red 3D. And sometimes you would just have this image that looked like you were moving a picture of a shark toward you. I've only seen it the once because
is this
I just
the one with Michael Caine?
No, that one's Jaws the Revenge. That's what would have been Jaws 4 if they would have called it that. And that's when voodoo controls the shark to take I know, yeah. Somebody while editing Jaws the Revenge, I guess saw that and was like, that's dumb. Voodoo Shark, which, by the way, would make an excellent sequel to one of the Sharknado movies at this point.
Yes, Voodoo Shark.
But, like, you didn't make Voodoo Shark movies back in the day and send them into theaters, especially as follow-ups to Steven Spielberg's seminal Jaws. So they take that out. But the book that is released that Peter Benchley did not touch in the least, the novelization based on the movie for Jaws the Revenge, has, like, a voodoo priestess. I don't even remember why she's angry at Chief Brody's family.
Oh, wow.
But, like, the shark follows her to, like, the Caribbean or, like, she's on some vacay. I don't remember exactly where it is. But it goes from where she lives and follows her.
Oh, it sounds like a must-see.
I'm saying, like, it's not just a shark. She doesn't just have terrible luck with sharks and her family have terrible luck with sharks. This is that shark that apparently wants to kill, like, in the same way that, like, Jason Voorhees wants to murder teenagers, this shark wants to kill the Brody family.
Hmm.
And it sounds stupider the more I talk about it, but, like, that's the reason why no one, like, when AFI, like, re-releases, like, its top 100 movies, Jaws the Revenge never pops up in there.
And what's the last Jaws movie?
Jaws the Revenge.
Oh.
Is the last one right now. They made a comical reference to it in Back to the Future 2, where it says Jaws 19. Now, this time it's really, really personal, and it says that it's directed by Steven Spielberg's son.
That's funny.
But that film does not exist and was not released in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But as of right now, and I mean, we are in the world of remakes and reboots and reimaginings, I don't know that Spielberg owns the rights to Jaws. I'm assuming Universal does. So there's a very good possibility at some point Universal is just going to be like, so
we can CGI the crap out of a shark.
I mean, we can make a shark kill somebody. Am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, am I right?
Again, remake the bad movies.
What's Richard Dreyfuss even doing? I'm sure we could pay him enough to show up in it.
Yeah. So, if you have seen Jaws, maybe once or twice, I implore you to watch it again and watch it a little more removed from the story, as in how the shots were made. Watch it and see things that you now recognize as classic Spielberg.
Well, I mean, like, again, if you will look at a lot of other films that he's done, like, this is something he does, like the movie Duel, which was a made-for-television movie that was actually released theatrically internationally.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this semi that essentially wants to kill this person in just, like, this regular, I think it's a four-passenger car or somebody, or a truck. I don't remember exactly what it is. But, like, it plays just like Jaws if Jaws were a semi.
Yeah.
And I saw this film years after I had seen Jurassic Park and Jaws, and, like, you start seeing these hallmarks of, like, the way Spielberg wants to place a camera, or, like, the way he wants to build, like, you know, your anxiety or the intensity of the moment. And, like, he's shooting a TV movie that easily cost under, like, $1 million, probably several thousand at best. But it's kind of his training ground for eventually being given Jaws.
Much like I believe you can recognize the guitar playing of someone like Jimi Hendrix or Eddie Van Halen without knowing it's them, you can recognize the style of Spielberg or someone copying Spielberg. And so it is kind of fun to watch a movie from a different perspective and think of it differently, even though I switch back and forth. Jaws is just so good. I say I put it on just to listen to it, and the next thing my butt is down, and I'm just... Well, it's just so good.
There's a handful of films that, like, back when I had cable, like, if it was playing on TNT or TBS or any of those, like, there's some movies that it doesn't matter how many times I've seen them or what point I catch them, like, on television, I'll just sit down and start watching it. And, like, Jaws is one of just those quintessential pieces of entertainment mm-hmm. that it doesn't matter where – if I catch it at the end, like, if I catch it at the very beginning – Or if I'm just like, okay, well, we've got to leave in 15 minutes. Well, whatever. I'm just going to, ooh, this is where they talk about the boat. Yeah, I'm absolutely going to watch this. I don't think it's necessarily a perfect film, but like it is.
It's real close.
It's quintessential cinema, especially mm-hmm. if you are a fan of film or a student of film. Like if you have not like watched this film multiple times, I don't understand you.
Yeah, well, there's that. Even my kids have watched it multiple times.
I mean, even a terrible Spielberg movie is, it's kind of like pizza. Like, even the worst pizza in the world, even cold pizza out of the fridge, still pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, and this is Spielberg at his best. Mm-hmm. Like, Schindler's List, Jurassic Park, Jaws. Like, there are some movies that Raiders of the Lost Ark, like, really, we could do a separate podcast just about Spielberg's impact on cinema and his films in general. But, I mean, like, this guy, like, when he is on, like, mm-hmm. he creates...
He's on fire.
He creates iconic moments. And, I mean, like I said, him and John Williams, like, I can start playing that theme, and it instantly,
makes
like, creates
anxious.
That image of that fin up mm-hmm. from the – and like I said, all you don't even need, like, the entire score. You need a handful of notes before you're imagining that shark fin in the
and
water.
And dare I say that if it were not for the success of Jaws, I doubt Discovery Channel would have Shark Week because I think it made people aware of the creature because not a lot of people knew about sharks and they started studying them. And
this film was – gigantic.
Yes.
Like it was definitively huge. Like to the point that again, Universal made, say, three sequels in the same way that like you really have largely diminishing returns and quality on the Jurassic Park movies.
Mm-hmm.
People like love that first one so much that like we're to the point that let's see, there's three Jurassic Park movies. Two Jurassic World movies and
the asset.
And a third on the way.
There is?
Yeah. Well, you don't make $1 billion.
I know.
People aren't like, how do we sequelize this? Well, all the main characters are dead. Well, bring them back to life.
Exactly.
I don't care. Make Elven Magic, whatever it is. Like, just boom.
It's there.
Make at least one. Who can we get back? What? Okay. Jeff Goldblum? Sure. Let's have him.
Dinosaurs. That's for another podcast. But anyway, Jaws. If you haven't seen it this century, you need to watch it. And you need to watch it with good sound.
It really is I mean, like I said, and I know I've brought the name up already in this podcast. Like, Alfred Hitchcock's, like, sense of, like, what's going on around him or, like, lack of showing what's actually going on and letting you play that in your mind. Like, this is basically an Alfred Hitchcock movie, like, mm-hmm. but shot in a more action, like,
right.
style. It, like, you can tell, like, Spielberg's influences, like, on his films. And like I said, Jaws is just, you really kind of need to cut, like, the clutter and the noise. Like, just watch this movie and let it engage you and let it scare you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you know what's going to happen, there are things, every time I watch it, I notice something else.
Yeah. And it, like I said, it's a film that I don't know that it's perfect, but it's really, really close. Like, there's not a lot of fat to trim off this steak.
Mm-mm.
Like, it's just a delicious, like, sirloin, like, just a New York strip of a state.
And having read the book and then watched the movie again right after I read it, a lot was cut from the book for good reason. It was totally unnecessary.
Well, I mean, there's stuff that the Harry Potter books to film, like being a prime example of it. There's some stuff that works fine in a novel or a book or whatever that really just does not lend itself mm-hmm. to like a film. And you have to know what to cut out, because otherwise you end up with a 4-hour movie that has pacing issues.
Mm-hmm.
And as evidenced by his career, you know, since then, obviously Spielberg has good instincts about movies.
He does. So Jaws is definitely worth your time. And we'll come up with something completely different for next week. Because that's what we do.
Unless she just lets me talk about Jurassic Park or Hook or really any Spielberg movie.
There are so many movies that I'm trying to steer us away from because I feel like we've already done several podcasts on them. And yet, I can wrath a con it from here to the cows come home.
I've had to fight making reference to it on
so many occasions.
Really every podcast we've ever recorded.
Yeah. So, Jaws, watch it. And thanks for listening to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
You've been listening to Parental Guidance Suggested. Download your favorites and keep up with new episodes in the Hints and Oakley Podcast Center.